Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Decoding TV listeners, it's David Chen here, and I'm recording this after we made the main episode. I just wanted to comment on a couple of quick things. First of all, during the course of this episode, we comment on how the location in Succession Season 4, Episode 5 looks very similar to Oscar Isaac's house from Ex Machina. That's because it is the same location. It is, in fact, the Juvet Landscape Hotel, which you can actually book a place to stay in, and it costs around $500, $600 for a night, if I'm not mistaken. So check it out, but just wanted to let people know it is the same place. The other thing I wanted to mention is the song that Kendall is listening to in the car on his way to Waystar Royco is Jay-Z's Takeover from his album Blueprint. So anyway, I just wanted to add in that supplemental info. Enjoy the episode.
Well, three-point PR plan is off the top of my head. Point one might be hard for you, but stop sending people your blood.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen.
And I'm Kim Renfro.
On today's episode...
And I've never sent anyone my blood.
Let's not make claims we can't defend, Kim.
Fair.
I'm like Roman at the end of the last episode. You're like, I don't think there's anything on paper to that effect. I'm like, Kim, are you sure about that? Anyway, you can on today's episode of Decoding TV, we're going to be discussing Season 4, Episode 5 of Succession entitled Kill List. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Decoding TV. We're broadcasting live on Decoding TV YouTube channel every week to talk about this week in streaming and other stuff that's coming out. And also a reminder, if you are enjoying this podcast, you're sitting there in your car, in your house, doing dishes, listening to Decoding TV. You're like, boy, this podcast is great. If you would like the show, the podcast to continue and have a solvent and bright future, consider subscribing to DecodingTV.com. Become a paid member at DecodingTV.com. Get ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus episodes all season. I am checking in with David Cho, a media expert. And we are talking about how realistic some of the stuff in Succession is. And those are bonus episodes available to paid members at DecodingTV.com. So huge shout out to the paid members at DecodingTV.com for making this show possible. And please consider becoming one of them, because it's through the paid members that this podcast can continue operating. Before we get into the episode, we want to follow up on some of the stuff that from last week's episode, Season 4, Episode 4, entitled Honeymoon States, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a bunch of things that have happened in the real world in the last couple weeks that I feel are worth pointing out as they relate to Succession.
Yeah.
First of all, I wanted to direct people's attention to Gabriel Sherman's excellent Vanity Fair profile of Rupert Murdoch. Kim, you and I have both read this profile, and I think we all had suspicions, not even suspicions, like... It was outright confirmed that Jesse Armstrong had originally written a Murdoch show. So the Roys were heavily inspired by the Murdochs, but I don't think we understood like the full extent to which some of the plots were inspired by the Murdochs. And in particular, Gabriel Sherman's profile focuses on Rupert Murdoch's health, and obviously that plays a huge role in this season of the show. So I just want to encourage people to check out the profile. There's tons of parallels to what's going on today in Succession.
Yeah.
And it's worth checking out. Kim, I think you had a chance to take a look at it as well, right?
Yeah. And just as someone who knows, like, I feel like my little expertise corner is like all the fictional stories and how they get turned into television. All of like the non-fictional stuff that gets drawn upon for a lot of dramas these days, I'm less informed with. And so having someone write such a like incisive and very detailed profile that made me just like, I was like raising my eyebrows every 5 seconds because I was like, whoa, that felt like something I've seen in Succession, or, oh, I thought that that was like a totally fictionalized situation, but no. So I think in the same way that people like love to watch The Crown and then get like the real stories behind everything, like Succession has so many really cool, well thought out storylines that you can get sort of real world analogies for. And this is a perfect example of that.
I think one of the conditions of Rupert Murdoch's divorce with his ex-wife was that she could not supply Succession writers' plot lines for the show. So that is how closely tied in, the real-life Murdochs are to the show.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I feel the need to bring up is this past week, the company SpaceX launched a rocket called Starship that exploded shortly after it took off. And... it was an unmanned rocket. Obviously, it's upsetting whenever an explosion, an unpredictable thing happens. Like, it's possible people get hurt. But I also think that it is pretty funny as well. Because Elon Musk, I think, is like an inspiration for many of the aspects of Succession. I would argue that he is very... the character of Mattson is heavily inspired by Elon Musk, I would say. And I can point to a few parallels if people disbelieve me. But like, in Succession season one, Roman oversees a rocket launch. The rocket explodes. This episode heavily features Mattson. Elon Musk, I think, heavily inspired Mattson. So I just wanted to bring that up because it just really feels like real life and fiction converging on a very profound level.
Absolutely.
The other thing I wanted to do was read this comment from Nate from DecodingTV.com. Kim, there was some... We tried to speculate last week about like what is Kendall trying to achieve. And I think this week it became pretty clear that he's just trying to be his dad. Like, that's my interpretation of the events of this week's episode.
Yeah, be his dad while also somehow defying everything Logan wanted in the last few months of his life. A little combo.
Well, I don't know about defying, but yeah, I Logan wanted the deal and Kendall's trying to kill the deal this episode, right? So like that's where it diverges. But he does have a point. We'll talk about it. Anyway, Nate from Decoding TV writes as a comment, quote, "It is a bummer to see Kendall back on his psychosexual CEO bullshit. It's always been bizarre to watch Kendall so awkwardly try and use profanity and dominance, sexual and otherwise, as a leadership / negotiating tactic like Logan did, only to come off sounding like the MBA student still hanging around his frat from undergrad. As anyone in recovery from addiction will tell you, the human brain is malicious and masterful in its attempts to persuade you that this one cigarette, this one beer, this one lottery ticket, etc. is what you need and it won't be a problem. When Kendall sees his name on that paper and we hear the main theme underscoring him on piano, we are watching a full relapse take place. He is Wile E. Coyote, gazing longingly at the roadrunner at the edge of the cliff, mere meters away. Logan is dead. The board is behind him. There's no Acme brand TNT or anvils in sight. He has every chance to walk away now. But the allure of being the man his father was, being the cold-hearted SOB that would skip a birthday party to make a sale, has him sprinting towards the edge of the cliff with oops sign in hand," end quote. Amazing comment. Great summary of what the dynamics are. And yeah, I would agree that is kind of what we are witnessing at this
point. Yeah.
I had some doubts. I was like, maybe he's trying to pull some other game. But no, I think this accurately describes what Kendall is right now.
Yeah. And it is like, yeah. Sprinting towards the edge of the cliff, oops sign in his hand. It's like that feeling that he is aware of how self-destructive this is right now, but like he's just in it full throttle.
I don't know if he's aware, I don't know if he's aware of it. Yeah.
Kendall. This is why Jeremy Strong is so good. This is like the fact that he can get across all of those different layers of what Kendall is experiencing and what he's trying to posture versus what he really thinks is just like, it's an incredible performance of a very well-written and complicated character.
Agreed. Well, let's get into the episode, season 4, episode 5, Kill List. Let's talk about overall thoughts. Kim Renfro, what'd you think of this episode of Succession?
I loved that, like, now I'm fully in the rhythm of like one day, one episode. It's been like really fun to be like, oh, okay, like
it is now clear that every episode is going to take place over the course of one day in these people's lives, and that season 4 is probably going to cover around 10 days, which means likely that episode 10 will culminate in the election, is my guess. Because in episode 1, I think Connor says the election is 10 days away.
Yeah, that sounds great. So yeah, I feel like the pacing so far, because of that choice, it's doing a really good job of like resetting the tension a little bit, but there's still so much like simmering that picks right up from the previous episode.
Yeah. I thought this episode was okay.
Yeah.
This is probably like the weakest episode so far, in my opinion. I predicted that the Roy kids would start screwing each other over, you know, but I thought that would take at least 2-3 episodes before that happening.
Next morning.
But no, literally the next day, they're right back at it.
It's been hours.
Yeah. They're already hiding things from each other and like undermining each other, right? So, yeah, I thought it would take a little bit longer than that, but unfortunately it's already happening. So there you go. This episode is one of the most beautiful episodes I think I've ever seen. Mm. Like, there is a shot where they are riding up the side of this waterfall that is just like heart-stoppingly beautiful. I think they're in Norway when this is, you know, for this corporate retreat, and it's just like ridiculous. And you can just sense the money pouring out of all these people. They didn't need to shoot it. They could have just had Mattson at his office. You know, they could have shot it in the office building, but I feel like it reminds me of Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie talk about Mission Impossible. Mm. And there's a scene in Mission Impossible 5 where they're at this opera house and they leave the opera house, and in the script it's like Tom Cruise and Rebecca Ferguson leave the opera house, and Tom Cruise is like, well, that's not going to work. Like, this is a Mission Impossible movie. And so they have this whole sequence where they like jump off the roof and grab onto this rope and slide down it and barely make it out alive or whatever. It feels like there was the option of, hey, maybe we could just have this at an office park in Norway. And Jesse Armstrong is like, this is Succession. You know, this isn't The Office, the sitcom on NBC, you know, like, so they really went all out for this one, and it looks amazing.
It really does. And I was also once again, really keyed into the color palettes that mm-hmm. we're seeing this episode. I've talked on earlier, pods about the fact that, you know, Kendall is almost always wearing brown or like mm-hmm. a very muddy gray color where it's like you can't even tell if it's brown or gray. Whereas Logan was often dressed in like navies and shades of blue. And you can see like Shiv is wearing a lot of brown in this episode, I think, because she was like, it's just all of the color palettes and the connections between the characters, I think, have been very well executed this season. And then this episode, it was like taking all of those and then showing you them in the real world. Like, now we're in an entire universe that looks very brown and maybe blue and like a little bit green here and there. But I thought it tied in nicely as you're seeing the kids all trying to like posture themselves in different ways and having that like gorgeous, pristine backdrop. Also with like the knowledge that no one there is having a good time, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
we're watching people fly private jets, get in private cars, not even have to pick up their bag and walk up like a pristine nature pathway to like the most beautifully architecturally designed hotel you've ever seen. And they're like, my room's too small.
It reminded me, honestly, aesthetically of, did you ever see that movie Ex Machina?
Yes.
It reminded me of like Oscar Isaac's house in Ex Machina. Like,
exactly.
That kind of minimalist, modernist style. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that was intentional in like shooting this on location. And
It increases their isolation, right? Is like shooting it in this location kind of makes them feel more isolated than it would otherwise, right?
Their isolation and their complete lack of perspective on what it's like to actually be a working human in the world mm-hmm. right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Like, it's just so far outside the realm of possibility for anyone else. And they're clearly siloed off in that ability to like experience crap like that and still have a miserable time. I would have a really nice time at that hotel for a weekend.
You hear that, Succession creators? You know, if you have extra points, if you have extra, you know.
Yeah, is that a Hyatt?
If you have extra Hyatt, you know, Hyatt loyalty points, you know, hook Kim up, okay? So.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All right, let's get to the episode and talk about what actually happened. The morning after the wake, Kendall and Roman have taken charge of business at Waystar Royco and are leading the charge to Norway at Madsen's request. At the start of the episode, the stated goal is to close the merger deal between Waystar and Gojo that Logan had been on his way to close when he died suddenly. The episode opens with Kendall listening to loud rap as his morning routine, which is the way that Kendall was introduced in season one, episode one of the show. A little bit different, though. He is slightly less pathetic this time around, right?
Yeah, we can give him that. It was a pretty pathetic intro. Well, because in the intro, he was like listening to, he had like giant noise canceling headphones and was in his private car. And they started with like us hearing what Kendall's hearing, which is like this epic rap song. He's driving through the streets of Manhattan. He's like pumping himself up for a meeting. And then in this episode, the music's just blaring in the car in general. So you miss what they did in that intro was they cut to him like, what it would sound like if you were just watching this guy with his headphones on try to rap along, and it sounds deeply embarrassing. Mm-hmm.
I think it was Beastie Boys in episode one, if I recall correctly. I don't remember. It was another very popular song in this one. I don't have it off the top of my head, but don't write in. I will figure it out. But the thing that was particularly pathetic about episode one was his driver saying to him, "You're the man, Mr. Roy." That always stuck with me. He was like, "You're the man, Mr. Roy."
Yeah.
Anyway,
such an empty hype up, like obligatory. You're the man. Way to go.
Because he was going in to buy Volter, which is something that is referenced in this episode. But anyway, in season one, episode one, as Kim points out in our notes, it was Roman coming in and mocking Kendall for his meeting prep. But now Roman is the serious one trying to prepare. And Shiv is kind of already being cut out of conversations about the company, which is something we could have easily predicted. Like, if somebody is not on the actual, in the organizational structure, it's hard to include them in all the meetings. It's very awkward, right?
Yeah. And also, I got a little happy at first because, like, Roman's like, "Oh, we should bring Shiv in." And I was like, "Yeah, bring Shiv in." And then the rest of the episode just proceeds to be like, "Oh, Roman's going to say that every time, and then Kendall will blow right past it."
He's eventually going to wear him down to the point where it's like, it doesn't make sense to bring Shiv in anymore.
Yeah.
But there's an amazing scene where Frank and Shiv are talking, and Frank's like, "Did you get this mass email I sent Shiv?" And Shiv's like, I don't think I got it. And here, how can you forward it to me? Look, I have worked in corporations for many years. And there is a lot of politics around who gets on the email list. And it is very often a struggle to be on the correct email list. It's a very annoying thing when you are not on the email list that you want to be on. And you got to have this awkward conversation because, you know, if you weren't on it, there's a reason you weren't on it because you were not important enough to be included on it. So there's always this awkward thing that happens where it's like, you got to talk with the person who's in charge. Hey, can
you forward
them
that to me?
Can you please forward it? Can you please add me to the list? And it's like, they never want to add you because it's like, if you were important enough to be on it, you would have been on it. You know, like, it's very...
Dave, who hurt you over email? What happened? Who do I need to talk to about their email listers?
I don't know why you're saying who, like, it's a singular, Kim. So anyway. What? Frank, Jerry, Carl, Carolina, Hugo, and Tom are trying to play nice with the Roy kids, and they also want to get the Gojo deal settled because it means a big payday for their shares. They all board a private plane to Norway, where the Gojo equivalent executives are having a retreat. Everyone's on high alert for a kill list. The people Madsen's team will deem redundant after the merger. It's like we're watching people meet their Gojo doppelgangers. There is this bizarro scene where they meet their bizarro halves. Like Carolina meets their head of comms and they look kind of similar to each other.
Yeah.
Very funny scene.
Short brunette hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why Greg is included in this, Kim. Like, I don't know why he would be on the list.
I think he just snuck on. Didn't someone say at the start of the episode, like, Greg, you're not in this car or something? And he's just like, yeah, yeah. And like keeps walking with Tom.
I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like he's an interloper. He's a, what did Carl call Tom last episode? Casual interloper.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clumsy.
Yeah.
Clumsy interloper.
Yeah, clumsy interloper. Yeah.
That is Greg to a T in this episode.
The other thing they're doing in this episode that's a kind of, I was surprised at how much of a subplot this was, is in that opening scene, they're talking about the fact that Waystar Royko is making a movie called Kalispatron. And they're trying to okay Kalispatron reshoots. Now, I think this is a clear parallel to Transformers. Like, it is the Waystar Royko version of Transformers. It's about a robot. It is extremely expensive and it's almost 3 hours long. Like, these are all characteristics of Transformers.
Yeah. Weren't there like six Transformers movies total or something?
There's a new one coming out this summer.
Oh my god, they're still making them.
Called Transformers Rise of the Beasts. I'm surprised you haven't.
The Beast. Well, now I'm going to become a really big Transformers fan.
You better. But yeah. But I think Greg is somehow on the list. I don't know. Anyway, whatever the case, Hugo says it's not a trip to the Guggenheim, Greg. It's musical electric chairs. So they're trying to figure out who's going to survive this merger.
Yeah.
The plane flight over, there's a moment where, like, Kendall and Roman are clearly trying to figure out how to approach Mattson, and Shiv is kind of being her usual and extremely irritating self and downplaying the importance of any of this. And let me just say a couple things as a corporate drone, a former corporate drone, that I really relate with here. When you have a meeting with someone who is at a very high level. I have not had a meeting with a CEO, but I've had meetings with people who have the meetings with CEOs, right? I've had meetings with people who are like one or two levels away from the CEO and like they need to meet with the CEO. So what Kendall and Roman are doing is like a fairly reasonable representation of what is required in that situation, which is you need to prepare for every single possible question and turn of the conversation that it could take.
Yeah.
You need, like, what if they ask you about this? Then this is our response. What if they ask you about this? This is our response, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what they were doing. What are we going to say about the Kalispatron stuff? You know, like all this stuff. And that's a hard job. It's hard. It's exhausting. And at the end of the day, you end up not using like 90% of the stuff that you prepare. So I really empathize with them. And then when Shiv comes in and is like, oh, this is all BS, I'm just like, shut up, Shiv. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, that was kind of my reaction there. So,
my reaction was just like, I was just like, oh, this is where it falls apart, because she's focused on the leaks that we know Kendall is doing,
yeah,
but no one really knows where they're coming from. So I'm like, great. Kendall's actions are now making Shiv focus on like the story about Logan's death instead of any of this. They also just genuinely don't want to include her in this and they don't want to take the time to explain that to her. So like, you're all just, you know, sheets in the wind at this point.
There is a nice scene where Hugo comes in and says, and Kendall says, hey, anyone who's leaking stuff, we're going to rat fucker Sam or whatever his name is. Like, we're going to get them, okay? Just for show, you know, just for like a little show there for you.
And I feel like Shiv saw through that pretty quickly. Like, it only took a few unanswered questions from Kendall, I think, for Shiv to be like, oh, okay, you're not.
I think everyone's going to see through Kendall this episode is kind of my sense. Right?
Yeah.
So
he's not being subtle.
They arrive at the place. Kendall and Roman are trying to steer the conversation in distinct ways. Roman is taking the careful, vaguely more compassionate approach to things, while Kendall is in robot CEO mode. But when Mattson makes it clear he wants to talk to just them, they leave Shiv behind. There's a lot of like nice little corporate. It's like a very awkward situation. You're meeting people. One group of people is going to have more power than the other group of people. Let me just give you a pro tip, Kim. Okay. And people can disagree with this, what I'm about to say, but like, you can call me superficial. You can call me too obsessed with appearances. But if there's a situation where you are about to meet powerful people for the first time, don't load up your plate right beforehand. Because it just is a really, it doesn't make you look more powerful if you have like a plate full of freaking focaccia and, you know,
yeah, whatever, like six different morning pastries.
Six different like morning pastries and, you know, charcuterie. Like it makes you look weak because you're handling all this stuff very delicately while being like, oh, hey, person who might fire me. Like it's just an awkward situation. I'm not saying don't eat. I'm not saying like you need to look thin or anything. I'm just saying, like, wait until the meeting has happened and then get the food afterwards. That's just my advice. Take it or leave it. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, because wasn't it kind of a trap? Like, didn't they say, like, oh, you guys are just going to have brunch? And then, like, halfway through them filling up their plates, they were like, oh, shit, the Swedes are here. So it was like, it literally was a trap because I think the Swedes knew those greedy Americans are going to fill up their plates and then look like fools.
Yeah, I mean, it's very subtle. It's just very subtle, like, kind of like, if I'm meeting you, I would prefer to not be holding a plate of food. That's all I'm saying, right?
I'm like, also like at a standing situation where we're standing. Mingling. Don't give me a plate. And then a drink. You can't shake hands.
No.
You can't.
No.
It's terrible. Bad. It's bad.
Terrible. Good. Yeah. I'm so glad you agree with that, Kim. Glad you agree with that. Anyway, Mattson the whole time acts super weird and squirrely and bizarre and mercurial, right?
Yeah, the whole, like, he'll meet you up top. And I was like, what does that mean? And then I saw that I thought that meant, like, oh, on the second story of this building or something. Then I was like, oh, no, it's a gondola to the top of a mountain where he has, like, a lair, for lack of a better word.
And again, I just love that they made it hard for themselves, like, the filmmakers. Because it's like, that place at the top of the mountains looks like they had to
helicopter.
Looks like that gondola is one of looks like that gondola is one of the only ways to get equipment up there, but they filmed in the gondola too, you know, and they filmed on top of it, so it's like they had to like move up all the equipment and all the crew up there probably, and they didn't have to, they could have just had it on at base camp, but they did it all the way up there, and so it's really pretty remarkable. But yeah, Mattson and Kendall and Roman meet and they kind of negotiate about what the amount is. The dollar amounts were a little bit confusing in this episode, I will say.
Yeah.
Because I think Kendall writes on a board $144 billion. Is that what he says? Or is it $144 per share? I don't recall exactly. You know when they're moving up there and he writes on a board?
Right. I thought that was like the total sale price when he was doing that on the board. But then, in these conversations, they start talking about a share price. And well, if it was 144, that would explain everyone's reactions to the 182 or one, and then eventually the final number, because that is significantly higher than what their goal was.
Well, here is what I will say. A couple episodes ago, I think when Logan passed away, there was a moment where Roman looks at his phone and sees how far the Waystar Royco shares have fallen in after hours trading or whatever.
Yeah.
I have screen grabbed that moment.
Uh-huh.
And the dollar amount of shares is $145.12. Right. And it was down like.
And it was probably still dropping. Cause that was right after Shiv did the press conference announcement. So it makes sense that like Roman looked at his phone and that was like mid fall. And then if it fell a little bit more.
I think that was probably like. At the base of the fall. Yeah, about the floor.
But, and they said that it went up a little bit after.
Yeah, they said that it went back up.
Back
so it's
up.
Presumably higher than... But the most important number, I think, is at the end. He says like 191 or 192, right?
Two,
or something. So 192. So that is a significant premium over the 145 that it was at. Now, I wish they had made these numbers a little bit clearer during the course of the episode. But like, suffice to say, like the most important takeaway is the number at the end is freaking huge. That's kind of like the most important takeaway. Right.
Right. Because I agree it could have been more clear. But what I liked about my slight confusion, like when the episode moves to being just Mattson, Kendall and Roman, like I thought the tension in that scene, the editing, the direct, like it was so good. And I was right there being like, I think I know what a win here would look like for one side or the other. But then he said that number and I was like, I don't know right now if that's a win. Mm-hmm. And so then it was actually kind of fun to like sit there and try to figure out right. what Kendall and Roman were thinking, which is what they were doing too, like trying to like react in real time without showing mats in their hand. And then it was very thrilling when they like finally left the room and told the execs. And I like, as soon as I saw the execs react to it, then I knew for sure, like, that's a really good number.
Yeah, it's a good number because I think they were coming into this thinking Mattson was going to torpedo the deal.
Like, yeah,
that was their fear. Now you say like Kendall and Roman are trying to figure it out, and I think if I'm to grade their performance this episode, it would be probably a C- up until the end, at which it would plummet to F.
Yeah, I was gonna go like D+ there.
Yeah. I mean, they like imagine Logan in the situation with Mattson. That is not how Logan would behave because Logan would be very clear about what he wanted. Now, to be fair, as Roman points out, their dad did just die 2 days ago. You know, and that is a very reasonable thing to be upset about and to be distracted by, and so on. But they look like the freaking Keystone Cops. You know, like whatever analogy you want to use, like they look very, very incompetent and outmatched this whole episode. And I think that's intentional. Like, I think you're supposed to think that they're doing a bad job.
Especially because if we again think back to the first season, and they've been in this exact position before where when Logan couldn't do his job, they got named as like interim co-CEOs or whatever. It was like COO and CEO. And they similarly just clowned that situation into the ground.
Yeah. They have learned nothing in their intervening seasons of the show, basically. Right?
And it's like we're watching them clown themselves into the ground again, but like in a slightly more elevated way.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I actually think I would actually argue that Roman does a much better, like Roman is overall like decently competent.
Yeah.
Throughout most of it, like the stuff he's saying is all pretty reasonable. It's all very professional. And that's what makes his break at the end very bad. What is bad, though, is not that like Roman didn't say the right words. It's that they don't know what they're doing. They're not in sync on like, they didn't even evaluate this as a possibility. Right.
They are consciously acting out of petty personal reasons, sound business strategy.
Right. Or guided by passion or guided by, you know, and, you know, again, somewhat understandable because Logan just passed away, but like they didn't game out any of this. They weren't like, okay, scenario one, Mattson declines. Scenario two, Mattson wants to buy the whole thing. Scenario three, like these are like basic things that any executive would kind of have potentially planned out for. And they did not. They did not. So
it does remind me of the karaoke bar scene and how right towards the end of that conversation when Logan was like trying to press them for an answer of why he should ask for more money, like trying to like really hear their reasoning. And they both kind of entered this almost like mocking tone being like, it's just my gut. It's just what I think I should do. And I thought that they were kind of like digging at Logan in that moment of like, they've probably heard him say something similar.
They were quoting him when they said that.
I think that this is us seeing that Kendall and Roman think they can step into that mode of like operating on my gut and just closing the deal. But like, they cannot.
The one thing that I think I am sympathetic for is like later on, Kendall makes the pitch, hey, we should tank this deal. And the reason we should tank this deal is because he's not going to get the company. He doesn't get the company and like he's going to ruin it. Now, we have literally just seen a billionaire buy a media company and, in my opinion, ruin it. So it is not a thing. I'm talking, of course, of Elon Musk, who I think heavily inspired the character of Mattson, purchasing Twitter. And I think he has made Twitter worse. New York Times just wrote a piece recently about how he's basically like the guy who bought your local bar and then, you know, let in Nazis into the bar. Like it's not a good situation over there on Twitter.
Yeah.
So that is actually a decent argument. The thing, and imagine Elon Musk saying he wants to buy Fox News and he's like, I'm going to revitalize Fox News. That'd be a very weird thing to do. That'd be a very weird thing to want to do. Like, and so it is understandable why Kendall thinks it would be a bad idea, but it doesn't feel driven by business decision making, certainly, right? It feels driven by his hatred of this guy, Mattson. Kendall is being driven by his desire to stay at the top, and run this empire. I think, right? So it's not completely devoid of any rationale, but it's not like they're not like cold-blooded killers, like making the best move for financially speaking. Ironically, Shiv is. She's like, just get rid of it. That's fine. Who cares? Like,
honestly,
we're gonna be fine. Like, we need the money anyway. You know, like, it's fine. You know,
totally.
Hey Kim, I don't think this Pierce deal is really gonna happen. That's my guess, but we'll see.
Shiv in this episode, I feel like this is a, to me, I came away being like, oh, this was a Shiv episode for me in terms of watching her once again try to navigate like an unwinnable position mm-hmm. that she has both put herself in and been placed in.
I actually think this was the most competent Shiv has looked in a very long time this episode. So I maybe disagree with you.
I think talking about two different things, because I think she was very competent, but just to what end?
Well, so she kind of gets in, she kind of ingratiates herself with Madsen. I think Madsen's kind of like attracted to her, is my sense. I don't know. Do you get any psychosexual drama from that scene between the two of them, or is it just me?
To me, it started. I literally, like, I was typing my notes and went all like, like just letters on the keyboard when they all first saw Madsen and he hugs Kendall, he hugs Roman, and then he makes it fucking weird when it's Shiv's turn. And mm-hmm. I have been in that position. Mm-hmm. It is a weird thing about like corporate office culture where women literally get treated differently just because they are a woman, not because of a like a relationship reason or whatever. And like mm-hmm. Madsen could have easily just gone in for a casual hug with her too for all the siblings. But instead, by like singling out like, oh, am I going to need a lawyer if I hug? Like that itself is a microaggression. That itself mm-hmm. is certainly sexual harassment. And so like by the time that she was, I feel like Shiv clocked that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then strategized around it.
Sure, yeah.
And so everything happening between her and Madsen did have an edge to it for me, but not because I thought there was like some genuine sexual attraction happening, but because I think that they both knew that they were in a power play with each other. And that obviously, based on his confession to her about this other employee who he's also in the middle of sexually harassing, like...
in a much more dramatic way. You know,
in a much more dramatic way, like just like that's what I mean when I say like Shiv was in an unwinnable situation. I think that she navigated it well, but
yeah, what I appreciated is that this whole Madsen situation actually plays to Shiv's strengths because Shiv in the past has been a political consultant. So it's her job to like make people look good. And it feels like the show setting up a situation where Shiv can actually shine, where she actually knows what she's talking about. And so I appreciated that because she comes off as like quite competent. Like the advice she gave him was actually really good. Like, stop sending people your blood. That's a really solid piece of advice, you know?
But it was also like, yeah, go ahead, finish.
Yeah. Well, it just felt like, oh, hey, like I'm unused to the show giving Shiv an opportunity to like actually show how competent she is. And I appreciate that it did provide her that opportunity.
Right. So. And I think I just mourn for the fact that every time Shiv's being competent, it's because she is knifing another woman
totally
in the back to make it happen.
That's true. It is quite the coincidence, isn't it, that that's how it plays out every single time. But
when Madsen called his current comms person an estrogen air freshener, I was like, oh, like just my soul dies on kind of a regular basis when I read things about famous men in the news, but like mm-hmm. to see it, to watch the way that they very, I think, realistically put out those dynamics happening in like a live conversation mingling scenario like that was just mm-hmm. brutal.
Well, there is a scene between those scenes we're talking about where Shiv, Kendall, and Roman sit down with Madsen after Greg and Tom have tried to have a go at Madsen, which is like one of the most painful things ever. I was like, they should not have allowed that to happen. And every single time Tom needs to interact with someone important, he fumbles it so badly. You know what I mean?
He tried the ludicrously capacious bag angle on Madsen and it just did not work. He was like, remember when we both made fun of a poorer person than us a while ago? And Madsen was like, no.
Just nothing. Just nothing. They start laughing at him in I actually tried to use Google
in
Translate.
Swedish.
Yeah, I actually tried to use, was it Swedish? I'm not sure.
But I don't know.
I tried to use Google Translate to like translate, and I couldn't get it. So this is what I will ask you: if you do know what they were saying, please email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Let me know what Madsen and his worker were saying about Tom and Greg. I would love to know that.
It was so fascinating to watch that be a turning point for Kendall in this negotiating session of like, oh, I draw the line at you mocking our
you
nepotism.
Mocking Greg.
How dare you imply that not everyone here has earned a spot that they obviously haven't. Like, and the whole like American versus European vibe of this episode mm-hmm. was also really interesting to me because Jesse Armstrong's British, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And it's always been very fascinating to me that like Jesse Armstrong, John Oliver, these British men who then spend a lot of time in America. It's very interesting to see whenever their media then shines a light on a very specific American thing. And it's almost like I've heard from other people that like with John Oliver, it's like sometimes easier to hear that from a non-American, like to get that kind of criticism
it's
from an
to
outside
observe
perspective.
It's easier for non-American to observe it too, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So the American versus European corporate culture nuances that we were seeing in here, fascinating to me.
So they sit down with Madsen again, and he's like, hey, we're just passing the time while waiting for your counteroffer. And it's just like, Madsen is like humiliating these guys at every turn because earlier on, Madsen was like, hey, just in case you don't know how this works, like typically I say something and then you say what you want. And that's how, and it's just like, Madsen is absolutely right. Like he is 100% correct that that is how it should work. And these guys, Kendall and Roman, are just completely screwing it. It just is.
He's an emotional terrorist.
It's painful. So you're like, oh, poor Kendall. I'm like, it's painful to watch these people be so incompetent. That's all I'm saying.
It's not even necessarily that I'm like pitying Kendall and Roman in mm-hmm. any of these scenes, but it is very obvious to me that Madsen is also not very serious about a lot of this stuff.
Right. And
he's not
a nice person, you know?
Does seem to enjoy
tormenting
them and then pointing out that he's tormenting them and getting away with it. And then like making them eat their crap a little bit making them really rich. But like the moment when he was finally like, I'm just trying to make you rich. I was like, yeah, guys, just take the money.
Yes.
Like,
wow. I didn't know. Is that Logan Roy on the other end of the podcast just now? I thought I was talking with Kim Renfro, hosting Decoding TV.
I want them to take the money and heal. Okay. These are, I'm a double-sided coin here. Take the money, also use it for extensive therapy.
Indeed. So Kendall and Roman, they talk about tanking the deal because Kendall ostensibly is like, hey, I like us running this company and Madsen's going to ruin it, which I actually think Kendall's right. Madsen would ruin it. Roman,
or at least break it apart for parts, as he said, like intentionally just dissolve everything. Yeah.
Roman freaking hates this guy's guts, so he's up for tank of the deal. They can't tank the deal in such a way that it looks like they tank the deal, though, because then the board would say, hey, these guys are acting against their fiduciary duties.
Right, because every single person who's not them wants to be paid above market value for their shares in this company right now.
It would benefit them.
Everyone.
It would benefit the shareholders. Like they can't not they have to tank the deal. You know, I think that Roman's reaction to Madsen is actually very human and very understandable because one of the most chilling lines of last episode, the Honeymoon States episode, was when Madsen's assistant calls them on the phone and he's like, yeah, you know, our dad just died. And he's like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Tough one or something like that. Like, oh, that's a tough one. And Roman's like, yep, it's a tough one. Thank you for that. You know, like they had no compassion whatsoever about like.
Yeah.
No emotion of any kind, which I think was actually not cool and actually debatably a bad
business
negotiating
strategy.
Tactic.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you need to be cold and callous towards the people that you're trying to land this
it's
deal with?
Absolutely necessary. But, you know, maybe it's a tactic because they wanted to provoke a strong reaction. Anyway, so Kendall gets Roman on board with tanking the deal. And Kendall asks, so Kendall springs into action. He's like, we're going to seed stories with the news media that there's a culture clash. And also, we're going to screen Calypsotron for the Gojo staff so they see what terrible assets they're purchasing and how much trouble it's going to be. And that is the plan as they head into a final conversation with Madsen.
Yeah. Also, so, shout out Jess, because that woman has clearly been working insane hours to pull off the things that Kendall asks for on a whim, including a screening of a movie that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, I don't even know how that's even possible, but I liked that. I had a little pride for Jess. I was watching Jess, you know, she's been here since like season one, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, look at you, Jess. You made it all the way to the top. You made it. You're the assistant to the top person now, you know?
I hope good she had Jess. A nice time. Time I would have in Norway, I hope Jess was getting at least some of that between her overnight work hours to make a movie screening happen.
So that's kind of what they try to sabotage the deal, but not make it seem like it's coming from them. They ride up the gondola with Madsen, and then Madsen basically sees through all their BS and is like, are you trying to tank the deal? And they say, no, we're just trying to let you know how much of a troubled shoot Calypsotron is. And, you know,
trying to be straight with you here. Like,
you're trying to, and he instantly sees through them because he says, you're Scooby doing this. And he says, he says a few things about their father. He says, you know, your father was a prick, but at least he knew what he wanted. I think he'd be embarrassed if he saw you now. Which are both things that I think are actually true. But, you know, as you said,
well, Logan was embarrassed before. So,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. 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 But it's at that point that you see, like, oh, yeah, I guess they really are. Like, I guess Kendall and Roman really are pretty bad at their jobs today. You know, like, I think they are not doing well at this.
Yeah, they didn't do well at either thing. Like, they weren't the ones who negotiated a better price, nor did they succeed in their actual plan, which was to tank the deal.
Okay, so then I want to talk about the Tom Schiff stuff, you know, later. But, like, basically, the episode ends with Madsen saying, you know, Roman blows up, and it's actually a very powerful, very good scene because you sense like Roman, who has been until this point bottling it up, not sharing his feelings. He finally is like, this is too much. Like, I need to say something. And he's like, we're going to put sand in the gears. We're not going to respond to emails for 6 months. It's going to suck for you to acquire us.
Would sand not really mess up gears that much though?
Maybe.
I was like, don't you put rocks in gears and then they turn into sand?
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, perhaps.
Sorry. But Kieran Culkin was incredible in this episode.
Yeah, you sense all this rage. He never shows emotion like that in general, right? Like, that character never shows emotion because he's too cool to have emotions.
He's a middle child, which, relatable.
And for him to, like, show emotion like that is both extremely unprofessional. It's like the most unprofessional thing he's ever said and very rare for the character. And I really felt for him in that moment that he hates this guy who made him work 2 days after his dad died, who's trying to basically disgrace the legacy of his dad, who he has complicated feelings about. It's a very powerful scene. Any thoughts on this whole sequence, Kim, which is kind of the culminating event of the episode?
Yeah, I liked the both like intimacy of it. And again, because of the location that they chose to shot on, like, I mean, to the point that it's on the nose where Madsen's like, look at all those little people beneath us, you know, to see these three men on this mountaintop kind of like actually being honest with one another for a change. But yeah, I think that this was a really important moment for Roman and Kendall in terms of like a limit to their ability to like really make a difference in the way that they want to. Like, you can just kind of see how they are being held back by themselves, but certainly by everyone around them. Like, they don't have any allies left, including Shiv now, possibly, because they clearly alienated her enough to the point that now that relationship is under question. So
there is this weird moment when Madsen says, you guys are screwed now. And then later on makes them an offer. Like, my perception, and I'm not sure if this is correct, is he's saying you're screwed now because you've basically showed your hand as to like what you want to have happen. And now I will come in with an offer so high that if you turn it down, you will be, you know, fired. Like, you will not be able to survive at the company.
Right.
That was my sense of what he was saying in that moment, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if you had a read on it, Kim.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Until I knew what he was going to do, I wasn't
right,
sure
exactly.
what that meant.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
then
exactly,
once Frank got the call and I was like, oh, I guess he just meant in terms of like, they won't get what they want. Maybe worst case scenario, they could get in trouble for having done what they did in terms of trying to tank a business deal. I'm sure that there's some SEC regulation against that or something. Part of me was like, was he secretly recording them on this mountaintop?
Right, like, right. I do think that having it on the mountaintop was really great because it's like, you know that no one else is watching and you know, they're not being monitored in any way. Although, like, it really did increase the danger for me. Like, I really did feel like anything
could shove.
Yeah, I really did feel like, is Roman going to, like, shove this guy down the mountain? Like, that's a thing that could... Is that
Look
a thing
us.
That could happen in the show? You know,
Look
yeah,
at us switching places. Didn't even occur to me.
I know.
That
I know,
someone
I
might
know.
Get shoved off a cliff. there you are.
Well, because there's like no cameras of any kind. There's no one around. It's like, if anything terrible is going to happen, it would happen up here. Anyway.
Yeah. And it was, again, red flags with Mattson being the one who calls Shiv directly in that moment. And it's like, send me a picture of their faces, which like, yeah, immediately cozies up Mattson and Shiv of like, now it's them two against Roman and Kendall in this.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, oh, it's repeating. This is where I was like, this episode's kind of, at the end of the day, only okay for me is like, it's repeating these dynamics of Shiv versus the other two guys.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. But it is an interesting dynamic to have Mattson in the mix. You know, we'll see how that plays out. Tom and Shiv have a few weird interactions this episode. I mean, first of all, what becomes clear is everyone's celebrating what the Roy, boys did because they theoretically got Mattson to a higher number. I love how Roman says, if you tell anyone I said this to you, I'm just going to say it was a negotiating tactic, which is which is a line that I need to use more in my life. Whenever arguing with someone else, if you tell anyone else I said this, I'm just going to say it was a negotiating tactic. So
I'm going to say I was speaking in a humorous tone.
Yes. In a comic vein,
yeah.
is what I was commenting. But Mattson basically does everything that Shiv says to do in the episode, right? She says, hey, we have a great person, Carolina.
Jerry can maneuver you through this.
Right, yeah. And so like those people are kept. And Tom is also somebody who is not on the kill list. What is going on between Tom and Shiv this episode? Because they have this kind of confrontational moment at the meeting. But then at the very end of the episode, Shiv invites Tom for dinner after they get back.
I felt like this was Shiv feeling that she's getting kicked by everyone else and then turning around and kicking Tom because she's the, like, aside from Greg, I guess, but like it just felt to me like Shiv taking out her frustrations and pain on Tom because she can.
Well, I got a very different vibe from it. Why would she invite him? My sense was Shiv has felt powerless throughout all this. And her dynamic with Tom was most enjoyable for Shiv when she felt like she was more powerful than him.
Yeah.
Now she's got Mattson doing her bidding. And so she's feeling her power again. And so she's like, hey, Tom, maybe let's make up again because I think I can figure out a way for us to be in this relationship if you, Tom, do everything I say, if I can, like, knock you around a bit. That's why she asks him out for dinner at the end. That was kind of my perception. So I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you.
Right.
You know,
I think we kind of agree. We're just talking about it in different ways.
Because they have, like, an antagonistic argument, but then, like, at the end, she's like, hey, do you want to go for dinner when we get home? Like, it's like, why would she say that unless she... Something about her opinion of Tom, her attitude towards Tom had changed. That's my perception.
Her treatment of him in this episode felt to me like abusive spouse behavior creeping back in, right?
Yeah,
it felt like the invitation to dinner came across to me like a kind of a threat of oh, I've now made it clear that I'm the reason you weren't on that kill list. So if you want a job and any future in this company, you have to be nice to me now. So like, let's go to dinner, sweetie. Like it felt almost like passive aggressive, but like, I don't know. It felt wrong. Emotionally, it did not feel good. It didn't feel like that's like, oh, maybe Tom and Shiv are reconciling. It felt to me like, oh, Tom and Shiv's circumstances both just changed again, and Shiv's taking advantage of this power dynamic once more. Mm-hmm. And I still, like, they didn't address any of her pregnancy stuff in this episode. So we went another full day just not knowing what she thinks or feels or plans to do about the fact that she's pregnant, most likely with Tom's baby.
Right. And if it was like a really true egalitarian relationship, she would probably tell him what was going on there, right?
Right.
Did you also notice that Shiv at various points in the episode consumed alcohol? I think.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, like when she's meeting with Metz in one-on-one, I feel like she takes a swig of a drink. And then on the plane, I feel like she's also drinking alcohol, which is like, I think kind of pointed because, again, one of the reasons we thought she might be pregnant in previous episodes was because she denied alcohol. So
I thought she was like doing a really sneaky thing because I saw her do it with the cocaine where she like took it and then just fiddled with it while she was talking and set it back down without having actually done any.
So maybe and she's not really drinking, yeah.
I thought that she's doing like the pressed lip thing where she keeps taking the glass of alcohol and then like mid-conversation but not actually drinking any.
The old pressed lip trick, huh?
Because I do remember back, we talked about the fact that she seemed to be going straight for like water whenever there was like a water glass tray around. But in the karaoke scene, they were drinking what I thought was like soju or sake. And it was like everyone had a clear glass. And I like watched, she like, I was like, oh, is she drinking that? But she just kind of like did the pressed lip thing for a second and then set it back down. So I don't know. She might still not be drinking, but it's definitely, they are keeping us in the dark entirely about how she feels about this pregnancy and what she intends to do and how she is relating to that in her consumption of drugs and alcohol and fish, I guess. Isn't there like, she can't have pasteurized cheese or something either?
I don't know. I'm
someone who's been pregnant can tell us, but
you don't need to email at decodingtv@gmail.com. we'll figure that one out ourselves. You can't just toss that around, Kim, or else we're gonna get like 50 emails about what you can do when you're pregnant.
Please don't tell me that you like our podcast, not what I can't eat if I'm eventually pregnant.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this episode of the show? Oh, there were a few other parallels I wanted to bring up. With real life stuff that's going on. You know, so why don't we end on that? We usually have quotes, favorite quotes. We're not going to do that today, but we will end with some parallels that I wanted to bring up to real life stuff. So before we do that, Kim, do you want to share with people where they can find you on the internet?
These days, I'm hanging around Instagram mostly, me and my cat Casper. So I'm at @Mick_Renfro on Instagram.
All right, check Kim out there. And of course, if you are enjoying this podcast, find more episodes at podcast.decodingtv.com. Find us uploading videos at youtube.com/decodingtv. Also, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok @decodingtv. We're publishing new videos there every week. Follow us across all those platforms. And become a paid member at decodingtv.com if you want to support what we do here on the podcast. We really, really appreciate everyone who's supporting us at decodingtv.com. Okay. So there were a couple of other parallels that I wanted to bring up. Something that Shiv says to the other guys, like they come to her and they say, hey, here's what Madsen said. And she says, hey, I heard that like Sid has a line into Jared Mencken's campaign. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This mirrors an actual real life plot line with Fox News. One of the things I found very interesting is Roger Ailes used to run Fox News. Roger Ailes was, by all accounts, a monster. Like, sexually harassed people, was abusive, like, just a complete terrible person. But he evidently ran a very tight ship at Fox News. And one of the things that I heard commented on was Fox News would, under the Ailes era, would never have allowed people at Fox to be actively involved in
political campaigns.
Because Ailes knew that you needed to maintain the illusion of objectivity on Fox News. And that is not present in the current incarnation of Fox News. Fox News host Sean Hannity appeared at a Trump rally in 2018. And apparently he helped to write an ad for the Trump campaign in 2020. And that is generally discouraged by journalistic organizations. You cannot be actively contributing to campaigns or be involved in campaigns. So the Sid being involved in Mencken's campaign feels like a direct parallel to that real life plotline for me.
Yeah. Like there being a open line of communication, whether it's text, whether it's a burner phone, whether it's something between a pending presidential candidate or any political campaign and the person running the entire news network.
Yeah. The other parallel that came to mind was Mattson sending his colleague half a liter of his blood, which, by the way, is a large quantity. I just want to put that out there. Like half a liter is like
the big soda things are like 2 liters, right? Right.
So it's like a quarter of that, right? It reminded me, honestly, of Jared Leto. Do you remember this Jared Leto stuff?
Around like Suicide Squad filming?
Yeah, like when he played Joker, there were rumors that he sent salacious presents to his fellow cast members, like used condoms and anal beads and stuff like that. And he has subsequently said, quote, to Entertainment Weekly, "Any of the very few gifts that were ever given were given with a spirit of fun and adventure and received with laughter, fun, and adventure," end quote. Anyway, it just reminded me of like, hey, that's another guy, another weird ass dude that sent out weird ass shit to his colleagues.
It made me think of the reports on people who like literally have like blood boys, for lack of a better word. Like there are like some sort of like execs, business people out there who like transfuse younger people's blood with their own blood, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I've read about that.
If you're a billionaire, you can get a young
Fresh blood. So I'm like, maybe Mattson is siving off his unused blood.
What are you going to do with the old blood? You can't just keep pumping in new blood. Sometimes you got to get rid of the old blood, right? And that's Mattson's.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Logic, probably, right?
Probably. he is that nonsensical of a person to me in the way that he seems to talk about people and things.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And yet, in this parallel universe to ours, he is incredibly powerful and can change the lives of people on a whim with a tweet or a corporate buyout where he then fires 90% of the staff or whatever it is.
The system works. And on that note, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Decoding TV. She is Kim Renfro. I'm David Chen. Next week, it'll be another recap of Succession, this time season 4, episode 6 next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.